From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. La Crosse is not alone in dealing with the heroin epidemic. It's an issue that's spread across Wisconsin and the country. But for the last 6 months, a diverse group has been regularly meeting to find ways to tackle the issue locally. Last week, La Crosse County's Heroin and Illicit Drug Task Force issued a series of draft recommendations to ultimately put an end to overdose deaths in our community. Here today to talk about heroin use and the recommendations are Keith Lease. He's the chair of the Heroin Task Force and executive director of Cooley Council on Addictions. Dr. Chris Eberline, he's an emergency medicine physician at Gunderson Health System and the medical director for EMF services in our region. And Emily Ladone, she's a member of the Heroin Task Force and a recovering heroin addict. Thank you all for being here today.
Good morning.
Thank you for having us.
So the Heroin Task Force brought together a lot of players from almost every sector within the county to tackle heroin use. And almost for the first time really looked at it as a public health issue. I'm wondering, Keith, maybe can you talk about, was there any certain moment that you all got together and said, now is the time that we really need to look at this and talk about this locally?
Well, I think that discussion has been going on in silos across the community for quite a while. And so probably 6 months prior to our first task force meeting, they had a community meeting where many of us attended and just kind of talked about it in general and what were we seeing, what were we attempting to do, who would be interested in working on this. And so through that initial meeting over at Viterbo University, we got a list of task force members and began that process.
And Dr. Eberline, I should have mentioned before, you're also a member of the Heroin Task Force. But what about addressing heroin use as a public health issue?
Well, it really, and like Keith said, we were operating in silos. We noticed it in the ER several years ago that we started to see it. I hadn't seen it, a heroin overdose. It was really a rare thing to see come through the ER. And then that started to become more and more frequent. And then about that time when we started talking about it in the ER, I got a notification they were starting this committee and jumped on it for a chance to make a difference.
Were you all prepared to handle almost the influx of overdoses that you were seeing in the ER?
We were prepared. The treatment is the same as other opiate overdoses, which we deal with not infrequently, unfortunately. But this was considerably more that we were seeing, even well above our baseline of opiates. So it really did change, kind of, it really opened our eyes to what was out there.
So why heroin? Some people say, well, alcohol is a huge issue within our community too. Why focus on heroin?
Mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't diminish the impact that alcohol and the other drugs play in our community. But people were dying at a significant rate and with the heroin opiate overdoses. And so because of those deaths, I think that brought it to the forefront. And then when we were looking at, what do we want to focus on? Obviously, all of the drugs came up and there are issues in a lot of different areas. We felt that to create the biggest impact in the six-month time frame and moving forward, that we really needed to keep our focus on heroin, opiates, prescription pain medications, so that we could really direct our efforts in that area.
And you both have mentioned the deaths. I just want to rattle off some numbers just to kind of help put it in perspective. But in 2010, there were 2 overdose deaths within La Crosse County as a result of heroin use. In 2011, there were 8 deaths. And in 2012, there were 10 deaths, which, I mean, just looking at how much that's grown, that's heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then are there other indicators? I'm wondering if you can just sort of give us a picture of what are we seeing? Who is using heroin within our community?
I think it's everyone that anyone that you think of could is. I mean, it's really going across all lines of socioeconomic status.
Even the people that you wouldn't expect necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Which is an interesting thing to say. I wouldn't expect them to use heroin, but you are running across people who are using.
Mm-hmm.
And Emily, I mean, maybe we can bring you in now. As you say, people you wouldn't expect. You're a former heroin user,
yes,
a recovering addict. Did you ever expect to find yourself as someone who was using heroin?
Absolutely not.
I'm wondering if you can take us back to Why was it? Can you remember the first time that you ever used heroin?
Not specifically. I would say about 6 years ago. And I had been prescription painkiller abuser for a long time. And as much as I loved opiates, I still didn't foresee that I would ever use heroin.
Why is that?
You know, that's interesting because for a long time, like I had been doing IV injections for a long time. For some reason, I just never saw myself crossing the line into heroin. And it was through another person who I didn't suspect was ever going to do it. He came to me and said, yes, I've used heroin for the first time. And at first I was upset. And then I was like, oh, well, if he can do it, maybe I can do it too. Maybe it'll be okay.
Why was it that you decided that you wanted to try it? And I mean, when you were using, why did you feel like you needed it beyond the addiction? I mean, because it's much more than the addiction itself.
I don't know that it was a conscious decision. It was just something like that my disease, a choice that my disease made for me. Also, it was cheaper.
Than the opiate, than the pills and whatnot?
Yeah, it was more accessible, absolutely.
How long did you use heroin for?
I think for about 2 years.
Wow.
Until I got to a point of desperation where I was like, okay, I've had enough. I can't do this anymore.
Did that happen after 2 years? Because I wonder if someone's using heroin, I mean, did it cross your mind a number of times that I need to stop doing this?
I think it was about a two-month period that was really that, oh, my God, I can't do this anymore. What has happened to my life? How did I get here?
And then at that period, what helped you cross over and decide that you wanted to turn your life around?
It was really a divine intervention. there was a series of circumstances that happened in one day. And that kind of brought me to a breaking point and kind of, for lack of a better term, the fear of God. And all of a sudden I was taking action and things started to change.
Did you ever relapse? Or was it?
As far as from the point where I started heroin until now, no. No.
Wow. And, I mean, Keith, we hear a lot about, I mean, getting off of heroin is not easy.
Correct. Yeah, it's one of the more difficult addiction in general is very difficult to overcome. I mean, there's just so many the kind of moving pieces that go into getting somebody not only to get clean, but then to stay clean. You know, there's a saying it's easy to get clean, it's hard to stay clean, and that's really where the challenge is because there's so many different obstacles for people to overcome. Often we think of getting clean as being a choice. Well, I've had enough. I'm not going to do it. And that is a part of it, right? But it's a choice that you have to make every day, multiple times a day, especially at the beginning. You know, people will have using urges, you know, constantly throughout the day, and they have to make that choice over and over and over again. And motivation to do that is not always steady. You know, it fluctuates from high and low, and so it's a difficult challenge, and it's not something that I would wish on anyone.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the beginning, for me, those urges were there very often, and it was about getting through the next minute and how am I going to stay clean. At this point today, I still have using thoughts, but that craving isn't so intense anymore.
And how do you deal with those thoughts when they come through your mind?
I've built a safety net. I've built a foundation for myself, and I've learned over the years to kind of build up my toolbox, and I utilize those tools every day. If it's from, you know, going to a support group to calling another person who is in recovery, there's a lot of things that I can do.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. Today, we're talking about the draft recommendations made by the La Crosse Heroin Task Force to tackle heroin use and addiction in the community. My guests are Emily Ladone, she's a member of the Heroin Task Force and a recovering heroin addict, Dr. Chris Eberline, he's also a member of the task force and an emergency medicine physician with Gunderson Health System and medical director for EMS services in our region, and Keith Lease, he's chair of the task force and executive director of the Cooley Council on Addictions. So Emily's story, although incredibly unique, and I thank you so much for sharing mm-hmm. your story with us, you know, she talked about how addiction began with painkillers, and that's something that we do see a lot of within the community.
Yeah. It's been an issue for a while. Our initial overdoses that I mentioned earlier were off of prescription painkillers, and we saw it transition to heroin, and I think it was about the time when they became more difficult to get, and so people transitioned to heroin.
Absolutely. I'd agree.
Emily and I have talked about this before, and it's been an issue of how we can stop that initial experimentation or trying of opiates that people are oftentimes getting from their family or friends' medicine cabinet.
Sure, just open the cabinet up. Mm-hmm. Oh, what's this? Give it a try.
Yeah, people don't see it as harmful because it comes from a prescription, because it comes from a doctor, and that's one of the things that we're really trying to improve upon is just awareness on the importance of not sharing prescriptions, of disposing of them, when you're done, and then, you know, with Dr. Eberline working on, you know, from the prescriber end of it as well, trying to clear that up so we don't have all these extra pills in the community.
How does La Crosse, I mean, this is an issue that's not necessarily unique to La Crosse. We're seeing it across Wisconsin, across the country, across the world, really. But, I mean, how do we fit into this bigger picture when it comes to heroin use?
I think we're on par. You know, for whatever reason, people believed that it was kind of more of an urban problem and you know, maybe rightfully so, but it's no longer the case. It really, you know, crosses socioeconomic, crosses, population, location. It really does cross, has crossed, pretty much any boundary we could put in front of it. So I think what we're seeing in La Crosse is a reflection of what we're seeing in the country as a whole.
So you all have been meeting for the last 6 months to really talk about addiction and use within the community. And ultimately, the ultimate goal is to end all overdose deaths within La Crosse County.
Yep.
So last week, at last week's meeting, you all issued some draft recommendations on really how to cut back on this. And I'm hoping we can kind of dive into those recommendations now. And I guess I should say, with these recommendations, you'll be handing those off to the La Crosse County Criminal Justice Management Council, which, Keith, if you can let us know what they'll do with the recommendations then.
Right. So the Criminal Justice Management Council is basically the county organization that birthed the task force. They're the ones that sponsored it and came up with the idea. So we will here in April take our recommendations back to that council, where they will we have multiple recommendations, and then we've got kind of our top five that these really can make a big impact, can make a difference. We really urge you to follow these, and then what it will be is them adopting them and finding out what way we can best support those and initiate those.
All right. So one of the first recommendations, and I guess these recommendations are under sort of different categories, but reduce access to drugs, substance abuse prevention, and reduce inappropriate prescription use. Does Dr. Eberline, do you want to talk about this aspect? I know one of the things that came about that's under this are these prescription drug drop boxes.
Sure. Historically, if you've had prescriptions sitting in your medicine cabinet, it was difficult to get rid of because there's only about once a year that you could actually go and get rid of these prescriptions. You know, we worked on the task force to get how many boxes now, Keith?
La Crosse, Onalaska, West Salem, Holman, and then the Sheriff's Department will all have permanent drop boxes, so five.
So you can get rid of these prescriptions when you're done, because oftentimes you take a few tablets and then they sit. This will give you an opportunity to get rid of them before someone else uses them.
Do you think that this will make much of a difference? And why so?
Well, we've done the drop-off days. Sure. That have happened along with the DEA take back days. And so we've been able to offer those more regularly in the last couple of years. And we've seen nothing but the amount of medication that we're taking back increase. We have yet to plateau, which is a big deal. And, you know, so the more that we can get off of the streets, the less it impacts a lot of different areas. So the less availability there is, the less likelihood of people breaking into houses looking for these drugs. It really, by getting them off of the street, it impacts quite a few different areas.
And I should mention that the next prescription drop-off date is April 26th, and there are multiple sites that people can bring their prescription drugs to across La Crosse County. Emily, you were nodding your head as Keith was talking about, you know, just almost getting them out of the medicine cabinets. And
yeah, well, on a personal level, my parents, you know, have been made aware of the drop boxes and are going to utilize them. So that's good. It, you know, does work. People are excited about it.
Is there anything else within the reduce access to drugs, substance abuse prevention, and reduce inappropriate prescription use under that umbrella that you want to touch upon?
Well, we've actually broken that because it was such a large category. We've broken it kind of into two. So the substance abuse prevention is actually its own subgroup now. We're surveying K-12 social workers, counselors, health teachers. What do you have going in your classrooms now as far as prevention and education, and what could you use? And so we want to take that information and then be able to implement what they need, you know, because each teacher knows their school the best. So that's its actual own separate category. And then the reducing access to drugs and reducing the inappropriate prescription drug use, we're doing a lot with the prescription monitoring programs, as well as educating, hopefully, prescribers that Dr. Ebeling can kind of talk about.
Yeah, let's talk about that prescription drug monitoring program. You all hope to have all prescribers enrolled in this by December 31st of 2015. What will this do?
Well, hopefully we will. I'm just going to go back a little bit.
Yeah.
It started last June. Wisconsin was unfortunately one of the last states to adopt a prescription drug monitoring program, where it's a central database that prescribers can enter and look and see if a patient has been getting prescriptions or getting them filled at multiple places. Ours was went into effect last summer, and as of January 1st, only 8% of licensed physicians in Wisconsin are even signed up for it. So there's a big gap that we need to fill. I don't know exactly what La Crosse's numbers are, but just anecdotally talking to other people I work with, a lot of them didn't even know this was up and running yet. So that's the first step, I think, is to get our providers in this area aware that it's there and how to use it. It's very user-friendly, and not just the providers, but the dentists. Anyone that can prescribe needs to look at this. And the nice thing about how it's set up, you can even have a surrogate under your license look it up for you. So if you're busy in your office, you could have someone else take a look and run these the patients that you're prescribing opiates to through the database and just see where they're at as far as how many they're getting and if they're getting them from multiple providers.
Okay. So, yeah, as an example, it'd be if someone wanted to get their hands on some OxyContin, they could go to four or five doctors and maybe get that prescription. And this system, almost computer program, would help eliminate that.
Yeah. Okay. You could look up and it's entered in as far as pharmacies are required to put it in when you fill it. And ours is nice because it's linked to Minnesota as well. And you know, some of the other farther away states, unfortunately, it's not linked to Iowa yet, which is pretty important for us because we're so close.
And what sort of difference will this make when it comes to the long-term planning in combating heroin use?
I think it's along the lines of the drop boxes. You're gonna tighten the amount of drugs that are out there.
Keith?
I think it'll also help in the prevention, you know, because when you're looking at long-term prevention is going to make the biggest impact. It's the slowest moving and hardest to probably judge, you know. You know, who did we prevent from developing an addiction in the first place? But the more that we can, you know, what we saw right away was how significant the amount of prescription abuse led into to the heroin. We noticed that right away. So, you know, with this, the more that we can make help doctors become aware of it, prescribers become aware of it, I think that will also help on the front end with prevention as well.
And Emily, you said that you started using heroin because you were using prescription pills. Were you getting those from other people, or was it one of those things where you had a prescription for it?
All of them. Yeah. It was, you getting know, it off the street. I had prescriptions. I would go doctor shopping. I would get them, you know, off the street from other people. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I wanted to go back and say that I don't want to downplay the fact that I did struggle to get off opiates for a long time. From the point where I, you know, started abusing, you know, something like hydrocodone, you know, there would be those in-between stages where I didn't have anything and I wanted to quit and I couldn't and I was sick and I just had to get my next fix so that I wasn't sick anymore.
I'm wondering if you can talk about that, because maybe for people who don't understand addiction, it isn't easy, and you talk about the sickness and how you feel, and just you can't just throw away.
Yeah, there's some definite severe but not fatal symptoms of going through withdrawal from opiates. I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. I've heard that said before, and I like it because that makes sense to me. It's like the flu times 10. You feel like you're dying. You can't die from it. However, it's miserable. And so that's where it becomes so hard for an opiate addict to quit.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. My guests today are members of the Heroin Task Force, who just issued their draft recommendations in La Crosse County. Chair Keith Lease is here. He's the director of Cooley Council on Addictions. Dr. Chris Eberlein is an emergency medicine physician with Gunderson Health System and medical director for the EMS services in our region. And Emily Ladone is a recovering heroin addict. Another one of the recommendations, let's maybe jump into the next one, is early intervention to treatment and recovery. What exactly falls under this umbrella, Keith?
Well, what we really want to do is increase the amount of people that are receiving treatment and move up how soon they're getting it, right? We don't want to, again, we want to put some more effort onto the front end to reduce the amount that we need on the back end. So to help people get into treatment earlier on, where they don't have to maybe commit some of the crimes or have some of the severe, whether it's an overdose or something of that nature, the earlier we can get people into treatment, the better off we're going to be. And it's also working closely with the drug courts. A lot of people assume that jail is a treatment, right? Like, we send people to jail for them to get better, and it's not really a conducive environment, you know, to help people get clean. Now, there has to be consequences, and we're not saying that, but at the same time, we want to put as much effort as we can into getting somebody clean and helping them deal with their addiction, as opposed to just removing them from society for a while and then sending them right back in without any new skills or tools. They do have groups and programs available in jail. Many times there's a wait list. And even with those, they're not as much as we would do at Cooley Council or at one of the hospitals in their behavioral health units. So we really want to increase people's ability to receive proper treatment, because we know, as difficult as it can be, treatment works. And when it does work, the turnaround that we get, you know, you can look at Emily as an example. The difference that it makes is significant. And so it's worth a significant investment. So that's really the focus of that subgroup, is how do we increase people's ability to do that? And, you know, with the Affordable Care Act and more people getting on insurance, it should be interesting to see how that, you know, all works out. But it's looking like, you know, we're headed in that direction. We've got a long way to go, though, a long way to go. But it's something that we feel is important to work on.
Are there adequate treatment options in La Crosse at this point in time? Sometimes I hear from people, you know, I wish if I would have just been able to have more time there, I maybe would not have relapsed. Or if I would have had more money, maybe I could have stayed longer and not relapsed.
Well, I think there is quite a bit. I think we have quite a few treatment options here in this area. Funding is always the biggest deal. When I receive a crisis call at Cooley Council, unfortunately, one of the first things that we ask is, do you have insurance? Because that's going to play a significant role in where they can go and what they can receive. You know, are you able to fund this privately? That's a big impact. And so, you know, I think we've got with the two large hospitals here in the area, as well as several nonprofits and private agencies. I think we have a lot of different options. It almost always comes down to funding. You know, it's very rare to see somebody get into those traditional 28-day treatments anymore.
Emily, what was your treatment experience like?
About 3 years ago when I did stop using heroin, I didn't go into treatment. I have been in inpatient treatment 3 times. I've been in a number of outpatient classes. Definitely planted a seed. Definitely gave me the support that I needed. As far as my stints go, when I was in inpatient recovery, I got out, I did good for a while, and I didn't work the program. I didn't do whatever I needed to do to stay clean. But I'm not saying that that treatment didn't work. I got all the support and the information that I needed, and it was wonderful. This time I chose, and thank God I have family in this area, I was able to go stay at my parents' for 2.5 weeks and go through withdrawal.
And have a strong support system, which seems crucial.
Yeah, and from there I started working, reaching out to the resources in this community to help me get on the right path and continue on and stay clean.
Emily Ladone is a member of the La Crosse County Heroin Task Force, and she's a recovering heroin addict. Keith Leese is chair of the Heroin Task Force and executive director of Cooley Council on Addictions. And Dr. Chris Eberlein is an emergency medicine physician with Gunderson Health System and medical director for EMS services in our region. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Coming up next, our discussion on heroin use in the Cooley region continues, and we'll keep talking about the recommendations made by the Heroin Task Force last week. To hear archives of today's show, visit our website at wpr.org/newsmakers. There, you'll also find a link to the draft recommendations made by the Heroin Task Force. And for updates on future shows, links to our archives and photos, you can also like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. La Crosse County's Heroin and Illicit Drug Task Force issued a number of draft recommendations last week that they believe will help the community cut back on and hopefully put an end to heroin addiction in our community. Our conversation on the task force's recommendations continue. My guests today are Keith Leese. He's chair of the Heroin Task Force and executive director of Cooley Council on Addictions. Dr. Chris Eberlein is emergency medicine physician with Gunderson Health System and medical director for EMS services in our region. And Emily Ladone, she's a member of the Heroin Task Force also and a recovering heroin addict. So the next recommendation that we have to touch on is improving mental health care. I'm wondering, why is this one of the major recommendations of the group, Keith?
Well, it's mental health and substance abuse challenges go hand in hand. Oftentimes, people will use substances as a coping mechanism for anxiety or depression, things of that nature. And if we can help people deal with their mental health challenges, especially early on, teach them healthy ways of how to overcome that, the shortcut way of substances becomes less appealing. Because unfortunately, substances are effective in the short term. Unfortunately, they end up increasing some of the symptoms and making them worse down the road. But that initial relief is really
attractive.
Yeah, it's pretty significant. And so what we want to do is be able to help people deal with their mental health challenges early and often so that it it doesn't lead into substance abuse. And then if they do have an addiction that goes along with it, if we can treat them both at the same time, it improves the outcome significantly. So we really wanted to make sure that that was a part of the equation. This whole task force from the beginning looked at things as a community issue, a well-rounded issue, and this is another way to do that, removing it from that silo, so to speak.
And Dr. Eberlein, I know you're working more on the emergency response side of things, but I mean, does this involve hospitals, the mental health intervention?
Well, yeah. One thing that we are doing, and I think both hospitals in town here are doing, is when someone comes in with an overdose, before they go, we at least try to get them, have our social worker meet with them and give them some options as far as getting treatment and getting help with their mental health problems that ultimately brought them there. Some are willing to hear it at the time, others aren't. But, you know, like Emily said before, planting those seeds for later is sometimes what you need to do.
One of the next umbrellas, I guess, recommendations is improving overdose interventions. And maybe one of the biggest players in this is access to Narcan. Dr. Eberlein, can you talk about what exactly Narcan is?
Sure. So the death from an overdose of heroin comes when the heroin actually shuts down your respiratory drive and you stop breathing. Narcan is a shorter acting. It's a antagonist to that, and it will clear off the receptors in your brain so you start breathing again. It used to be a higher level emergency medical service drug. Tri-State was the only one that used to carry it. There was a pilot program this last winter that started that allowed La Crosse Fire and Onalaska Fire to apply, and we got them the ability to carry it. So that is one, because the sooner you can get that drug to people, the higher likelihood that they'll start breathing and not die from this overdose. That in addition to good basic life support, airway management is what's going to save people. Along with that, letting people know that there is an antidote for this to help reverse those effects in the community, I think it makes it more likely people will call if someone's overdosed, which is another thing that's important. And so that's really where we're working at getting that throughout the community. And soon, hopefully this summer, we'll be able to give that to all first responder agencies, not just La Crosse Fire and Onalaska Fire, but all the surrounding first responder agencies will be able to carry it and be able to get on scene faster with this drug.
I mean, this seems like a move that is pretty significant.
Absolutely.
Can you kind of expand on it a little more, Keith? I mean, yes, the purpose is to prevent death, but I mean, is this could be almost a game changer in a way?
I think so, because, you know, if somebody dies, you lose the ability for them to make changes. And it's people will go on both sides of that, but ultimately, as far as we're concerned, saving lives is, you know, it's a priority. It's the number one. So, and when we can do that, you know, there is no crystal ball, and so there's no telling when we save a life what that person is capable of doing. When you look back at so many recovering addicts, and you look at how many times they came close to near death. But they survived that, and now they're doing amazing things in the community, making impacts that we couldn't have foreseen when they were using that, you know, people would have never saw coming. And so to be able to remove, or to be able to get to the point where we have zero deaths, I think it's a lofty goal, but it's, you know, it can be achievable, and the impact that it has, I don't think there's any way that we could figure that out exactly.
That's what I was wondering about, that, because the ultimate goal is to prevent any sort of death. But, I mean, will it ever get to a point when heroin use just completely ends in La Crosse County?
No. I don't think that we'll ever – I can't foresee a way that we would ever get to a point where nobody is abusing substances, including heroin, but we can reduce it significantly. We know we can do that, and we can get to a point where people aren't dying from it, you know. So is it realistic to think that we can just that this will completely go away. I think that's probably unrealistic, but I think we can get to a point where our brothers and sisters, our sons and daughters aren't dying from it. And that's a big deal.
Another aspect of the Improve Overdose Interventions recommendation is the needle exchange program. And I believe the AIDS Resource Center here in La Crosse, they've been really instrumental in making sure that, you know, people are getting clean needles and whatnot.
If I may, I first heard about Narcan through the AIDS Resource Center.
Right, because they provide Narcan people who are using.
Fortunately, I never had to give it to anybody or take it myself. Actually, my concern with Narcan at first was addicts might think, oh, I can do all the heroin I want, and then I can just shoot myself up, or somebody can shoot me up with Narcan, and it'll be fine. Well, I brought that up. I was talking with somebody about it, and they said, well, you know, it's not an awesome experience. You know, it doesn't feel good to have been shot up with Narcan and, you know, waking up and going, holy crap, I almost died. Right. Could be a life changer for a lot of people, and I'm sure it has been. But yeah, the AIDS Resource Center, I was able to utilize their services a lot, and I was really grateful.
And this was pretty, I mean, the numbers are pretty staggering. At the AIDS Resource Center of La Crosse, in 2013, they distributed almost 92,000 clean needles to people, which that's huge. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about, because some people may say, you know, why would they even be giving out clean needles? What is the importance of having that within the community?
Mm-hmm. And that's a question that we had talked about. And along with, you know, I just read in the paper that the fire department is, now that the snow is melting, finding stray needles. And that's something that we want to address too. Ultimately, it comes down to that public health model. This is a public health issue. By providing those clean needles, we're reducing the hepatitis issue. We're reducing HIV, AIDS. Again, we're keeping preventing disease and infections from being spread. And Dr. Eberlein could probably talk more about this, but it really comes down to the public health and mitigating some of those major health concerns. We need to do a better job of providing places, safe places for needles, those sharps containers. You know, you see them at certain gas stations, and sometimes they can be full to the brim. You know, we need to have more of those out there so that people aren't sticking them in parking ramps or you know, in parks and things like that. So we need to do a better job of collecting them, but I don't think that's a reason to not distribute them, because if somebody gets HIV from this, and it doesn't stay within IV users, right? So that person contracts HIV from a needle, and then he goes to a college party and has unprotected sex, you know, with somebody who's never done anything but have a beer. Now that person has HIV. And you know, I don't mean to use that as a scare tactic, but, it really is just a public health issue that we're able to address in this way. And the AIDS Resource Center of Wisconsin does a tremendous job with that.
Dr. Eberlein, do you want to add on to anything that Keith talked about?
You know, it's been pretty well shown that needle exchanges do reduce the incidence of some of these very severe diseases. And it's something that, you know, it's unfortunately this is a consequence of having that. But, you know, this should be more solvable than treating people with these diseases. So I think it's just something as a community we'll just have to look at ways to solve.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Today, I'm talking with members of La Crosse County's Heroin Task Force, who issued a number of draft recommendations last week. My guests are Dr. Chris Eberlein. He's an emergency medicine physician with Gunderson Health System and medical director for EMS services in the region. Keith Lease is chair of the Heroin Task Force and executive director of Cooley Council on Addictions. And Emily Ladone is a recovering heroin addict. I'm wondering about cost issues, because Keith, as you talked about, generally with any sort of addiction recovery, money can be short. Is there funding that will keep the efforts of the task force going? Are you all seeking grants for different programs? How much is this? What is the bill you're looking at, I guess?
Well, we were initially funded. We had one person who was able to be funded for 10 hours a week through the county, and that was Al Bliss, and that was a tremendous help.
Al kept a lot of the records.
Al put in just a tremendous amount of work. Everybody else, excuse me, has volunteering their time, and with these subcommittees right now, we don't have funding. It's being integrated into, you know, existing coalitions, or like for me, it's a part of Cooley Council's mission. So we'll send me to these meetings and work with what we can. We also do some prevention work. Gunderson Lutheran is able to provide time for their employees to come and participate. So it's we don't have any outside funding right now. It's not saying that we're not looking at it. We're always looking for different funding options. But right now, this is literally a grassroots movement of organizations in this community working together and pitching in to make this happen. So
you mentioned the subgroups and the Heroin Task Force. Your work is not done. I believe you're meeting at the end of May. But in the meantime, and probably for the foreseeable future, you're breaking up into these subgroups that look at each of these different recommendations. Emily, you're working with the Substance Abuse Prevention Group. Keith, you're chairing the Early Intervention to Treatment and Recovery Group. And Dr. Eberlein, you're chairing the Improve Overdose Interventions Group. I'm wondering if you can each just maybe talk about these different groups. And obviously, you all have to get together still and really define the goals, which some are laid out. But Emily, what are you most looking forward to within your group?
Well, I think about after my third or fourth meeting with the Heroin Task Force Committee, I felt like it was laid on my heart, like, go to the schools and talk to the kids. And so that was something that I brought up repeatedly. And it just kind of fell into place when I, you know, found this subcommittee, and I just felt drawn to it. And I'm really excited to be working with other people on that committee. And what we're first trying to do, we've kind of put together, you know, a list of questions to go into the schools, talk to different staff people, whether it's the counselor or the principal, what have you, just to get an idea of what they do have within their schools, you know, what tactics they're using. And I just want to say, to put this out there, that we're not coming in to say, your way isn't working, you suck. It's more of like, hey, let's work together and really try to find a positive solution here and try different things. So I'm really excited about it.
And you already have talked with at least one school, I know for sure.
I went into the Bangor High School. I talked to kids ranging from ages 14 to 18.
And just sharing your story?
Yeah, just shared my story. And I think it was really impactful. It was really comfortable to talk to them. I've talked to other groups before, and I felt more nervous, but I felt like they were really soaking in what I was saying to them, and it made me feel really good that, you know, these kids want to know what's out there, what's different, and what's not good, and yeah.
And do students then come to you with questions?
Some students did, yes. I had one kid who kind of just started telling me his whole story about his family and all these struggles, and that was great. And I had a couple other kids with, you know, questions afterwards, and yeah, it was awesome.
And Keith, your group is the Early Intervention to Treatment and Recovery. Beyond some of the goals, what are you most looking forward to accomplishing within this group?
Well, I guess the loftiest of goals is to make sure that everybody who needs treatment gets treatment for as long as they need it. That's a huge, huge uphill battle, and I don't know that we'll ever get there, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't work towards that. So there's a lot of different ways to do that, and we're going to explore as many of them as we can.
And Dr. Eberlein, Improve Overdose Interventions. We talked about Narcan, but what else?
Get Narcan throughout the first responder agencies. I think that's going to be a big step. And as soon as it goes to state approval after this pilot program, that should happen. And then getting the providers more knowledgeable on the prescription drug database and more knowledgeable on the issue that's at hand in our city.
So with the Heroin Task Force, I know you look towards, is it Madison or Dane County, at some of the models that they've been doing in really tackling heroin use in the community. But, I mean, do you feel like what's going on here in La Crosse is unique? Are there other people that are now looking to La Crosse and seeing what you all are working on?
Well, we haven't had any requests to go to other communities yet. We were able to bring in Dane County and talk about their heroin task force and what they did as a community. We were able to have the police chief from Green Bay and Brown County come in and talk about what they did. You know, there are programs out there that we've modeled this after and adapted it to La Crosse. Now, La Crosse is kind of a common size area with a mix between, you know, metro and rural areas. And so in that way, I think that we could be a model for other areas. I think the wide range of professionals and people in the community that we've brought together for the task force and then being able to split into those subgroups, I think it's a sustainable model that people can look at implementing in their communities.
A lot of discussions, or when people think and talk about heroin, they talk about the stigma that surrounds addiction and heroin use. But it seems like over this last year, you know, we're hearing discussions about heroin use within La Crosse County as a result of the La Crosse County Heroin Task Force. People are talking about it in the state capitol with Representative Nygren's different heroin bills. You know, maybe more people are talking about it around the dinner table. But do you think having these conversations going is one of the biggest first steps in really tackling the issue?
Absolutely.
Do you want to elaborate
that
a little more?
Well, it's a community issue, and the more that we talk about this and get the information out to the people that this is a problem, the more people in the community can pitch in and help make a difference. We have to work together.
Do you feel like maybe there is a mind shift when it comes to addiction, or we still have some work to do when it comes to that?
We definitely have some work to do, but it is starting to shift. You know, addiction is like the thing that we want to sweep it underneath the rug, you know. It's because a person can't develop an addiction unless they take that substance for the first time themselves often. And so people will use that as a way of saying, well, it's your fault, and that removes the burden from us as a community in dealing with that. And so having these discussions and talking about, you know, that it is a brain disease and people can get better, but they need help. They need the support. This is a community-wide public health issue. You know, I think those conversations are all important. We don't turn people on to using drugs by talking about them like in this way. It's only going to benefit us. And I think we're starting to realize that and come to that conclusion.
Yeah, this is not a problem that the task force can solve by itself. We need the whole community to help us out to do this. As basic as knowing it's a problem and getting rid of your prescriptions that you're not using your medicine cabinet, to talking to your friends and family about the problem and referring those at
the dinner table.
Yeah, exactly. Referring those that need help to get help. That's where we have to go.
So you sort of touched on my final question. What can the average, in quotes, person do in La Crosse to really tackle this? And I almost want to break it up into two groups. Someone who is connected to someone who has a loved one who is addicted to heroin, and maybe someone who doesn't have any experience with someone who's addicted. What can they do? Keith, if you want to start, you're nodding your head in enthusiasm.
Yeah, there are a lot of programs and ways that people can go about helping. For loved ones, I always tell people when they call people with addictions, they have defenses around their using. Many times they know what they're doing is not okay, or they're not okay with what they're doing, and so they have defenses built up around that. And so it's very difficult to have that conversation without raising those defenses and pushing people further away. And so what I tell people, you know, is you know your situation the best. But try to come at it using the I statements. You know, this is what I'm seeing. This is how I feel. This is what I see. This is what I'm scared of. And this is what I'm willing to do to help. Because a person can't argue how you feel. You know, it's a difficult conversation to have. If you'd like some more help with that, you can call. Both of the hospitals have behavioral health units. We get some funding through the United Way to do crisis work with families and individuals. So you can call Cooley Council on addictions. You know, there is help out there. There's more to do than just bang your head out up against a wall. There's ways that we can. There's no magic bullet, but there's ways that we can help speed that process along.
Emily, I don't know if you want to quickly add any.
Keith said it really, you know, talk about it, talk about your feelings, use I statements. Sometimes it can be a really powerless situation, but, you know, be real.
And Dr. Eberlein, do you have any quick final?
Sure. I mean, it's not a hopeless situation we're facing as a community. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can make a big difference on this. We're just going to have to work together and work towards accomplishing these goals. But it's going to be difficult, but it's definitely not hopeless.
Dr. Chris Eberlein is a member of the La Crosse County Heroin Task Force, and he's an emergency medicine physician with Gunderson Health System and medical director for EMS services in our region. Keith Leese is chair of the Heroin Task Force and executive director of Cooley Council on Addictions. And Emily Ladone is also a member of the task force and a recovering heroin addict. Thank you all for sharing your experiences and your stories today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes John Gatto, Mary Meehan Strube, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. There, you'll also find a link to the draft recommendations made by the Heroin Task Force. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.